Well, this is the last of our series on what Southern Baptists believe, and it's appropriate that we get to talk about the family today on Father's Day. And we are grateful for all of our fathers. We are grateful that we can give you a gift that you can use in the days ahead, and we're grateful for the role that fathers play in the life of families, in the life of our nation. And so I want to take the rest of my time to share several passages of Scripture with you. They're certainly not the only ones that deal with family, but they are some of the ones that we are very familiar with. That God has ordained the family. If you have your outline, some of this is on that outline, and this is one of the paragraphs that I have put there, that God has ordained the family as the foundational institution of human society. And notice it is composed of persons related to one another by marriage, blood, or adoption. Both my son-in-law and my daughter-in-law, as some of you know, were adopted. And they're just as much a part of their family as anybody that would be given by birth. And they are a joy to be a part of their life. Now, as you see on the outline, there are three major tenets that I'm going to share with you throughout this message. Number one, marriage is the uniting of one man and one woman in covenant commitment for a lifetime. It is God's unique gift to reveal the union between Christ and His church. Secondly, the husband and wife are of equal worth before God, since both are created in God's image. And lastly, children from the moment of conception. Did you get that? Children from the moment of conception are a blessing and heritage from the Lord. Therefore, confusion over the nature of the family in our country has produced a context of great danger to our culture. Let's talk a moment about the foundational institution. The modern secular concept of the family in our nation today is largely driven by sociological theories and assumptions. And this has been going on for a long time in our nation. It's only gotten worse. And this particular part of our Baptist faith and message on the family, on marriage, was not added to our Baptist faith and message until 1998. And the traditional family structure, according to culture today, are merely the product of human social evolution. Heard that word evolution before? A long time ago. Probably heard about it in school. But so many in our country today are thinking of the family structure as merely the product of human social evolution. And those in our culture today who favor the secular view believe the family is simply a sociological development. and that we can renegotiate and restructure the family unit to meet modern expectations. And so therefore, there are thousands upon thousands of American citizens who are confused about the family. And many of them are accepting the family that is led by two men or two women or a transitional man or woman. Now, when you're that confused, you are confused. And you are definitely long, long way from biblical teaching. Some people have remarked in the last couple of weeks' sermons that I was definitely in the Spirit. Well, I'm in the Spirit about the family. And I don't apologize for it. Because the family is the foundation of America. And so as your outline says, we believe marriage, which was instituted by God before the fall, was a central part of God's design for humanity from the beginning. And you don't have to go very far in the Bible to see that being taught in Genesis chapter 2, beginning with verse 23, we find these words. And I have been looking through all of my Bibles to find one that had dark print, fairly large print, so that these weakening eyes can see and read. So, beginning with verse 23, the man said, "This is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." Now, when you look at that sermon or that passage a little bit in more detail, you'll find that these couple of verses are Adam's first recorded words in the Bible. And it expresses his delight with God's handiwork and with God's recognition of the unique, suitable companion of God, which is the last recorded creation in the creation account. And as with no other piece of divine craftsmanship, this one was singularly suited for the man being bone of his bone and flesh of his flesh. Little Hebrew lesson. The Hebrew term Ishsha identifies the woman as the feminine complement to Ish, which is the Hebrew term for man. So God created the woman as a complement to the man. And the one flesh relationship includes husband and wife coming together in spiritual, mental, and emotional harmony. Notice it says man and woman, bone of the man's bone, flesh of the man's flesh. Very clear about marriage. The man said, this is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. And she is about to be called woman because she was taken out of man. And for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. So we Southern Baptists believe the family consisting of a mother, a father, and if God grants them children, of the children, and that this reflects God's glory and the right ordering of civilization and society. And the Baptist Faith and Message affirms that God ordained the family as the foundational institute of human society. And as Christians, we must insist that marriage was a central part of God's design for humanity from the beginning. Marriage, as recalled in Genesis chapter 2, verses 23 and 24, is a central part of God's design for humanity from the beginning. Being a man and wanting to be a woman, being a woman and wanting being a man, was not a part of God's design. Having a man marry a man was not a part of God's design. Having a woman marry a woman was not a part of God's design. And all of this is doing is crumbling the foundation of America and the family. Secondly, not only is marriage and family the foundational institution designed by God, but as I've already implied very clearly, the second major part of this part of the Baptist Faith and Message emphasizes one man and one woman. Marriage is the uniting of one man and one woman in covenant commitment for a lifetime. Hebrews 13:4. Marriage is to be held in honor among all. And the marriage bed is to be undefiled for fornicators and adulterers God will judge. Now, in Hebrews 13:4, there are two pro-marriage ideas that appear in verse 4. Number one, marriage is to be honored by all because marriage is divine in its origin and is right and good in its practice. Secondly, those who are married must maintain moral purity. And so that's a central part of our Baptist faith and message. God honored marriage by establishing the metaphor of the bridegroom and the bride to express the relationship between Christ and His church. We need to be reminded that Christ redeemed people, you and I, are described as the bride, and the Lord Jesus Christ is the bridegroom. If you go all the way to the last book of the Bible, Revelation, chapter 19, verse 7, it says, let us rejoice and be glad and give the glory to Him, for the marriage of the Lamb has come and His bride has made herself ready. So the Bible established marriage as the only proper areas for and channel of sexual expression. Now, most of us are an older group. Well, all of us in here are older. And you've had all the lessons on the gift of sex, but I'm going to, because it's in the Baptist Faith and Message, I'm going to mention it. So don't go home and say, why in the world did he talk about that? As long as we've been married. Well, you got to preach the truth, right? And you got to preach the whole truth. So I just simply want to say that the gift of sex is intended to strengthen the marital bond and to affirm the exclusiveness of the relationship between the husband and the wife. And only in the one flesh relationship can sex find its proper place and be received as the gift God intended it to be. Now, if you're a Christian and you believe in God and you believe that His Word is inerrant and inspired and without error, you understand that when God created a man, He built him in a certain way, right? And then when God created a woman, He built her in a certain way. And they were built so that they could join together. Now that's pretty common sense, isn't it? And He created man and woman to reproduce, to replenish the earth. A man and a man and a woman can't do that. And even if you're not a Christian, even if you don't believe in the Bible, common sense says they're not built that way to do that. And yet, we're constantly hearing and celebrating a whole month, this month, of that lifestyle. So the Baptist Faith and Message affirms that both husband and wife also are of equal worth before God, and that both the man and the woman are created in God's image. Genesis 1:27. The man is not better than the woman, as some men think today. They are equal in God's sight. They have equal worth, equal value. Article 3 of the Baptist Faith and Message reminded us that the gift of gender is part of the goodness of God's creation. And the Bible teaches us that the wife is to submit herself graciously to the servant leadership of her husband, even as the church willingly submits to the leadership of Christ. Now let me say that again, and again, because we're all an older crowd. Those of you that are married have been married a long time. The wife is to submit. You know, a lot of young couples today, when they come and want to talk to me or other pastors about marriage, and you start planning out the ceremony, the young lady will say, I don't want to use the word submit. And it's because they have the completely wrong idea of what that means. It doesn't mean that you submit to your husband no matter what. It means that you submit yourself graciously to the servant leadership of the husband. Not the bossy leadership. Not the abusing leadership. Not to, I am better than you are leadership. It is the servant leadership. Submission points to the wife's role in glorifying God by honoring the role God has designed for the husband. If the husband is leading in the family in a Christ-like way, then the woman should want to submit. Because he's loving her. He's treating her like a queen. He's ministering to her. He's there for her. He's a servant. She's first in his heart after God. If the husband is leading as a servant, and that would hopefully mean that he's a Christian and he understands what the Bible tells him about being a husband, then she should be willing to submit. And then the husband is obligated to give himself in sacrificial service to his wife and family. The husband is to devote himself to his wife and family and exercise his responsibility to lead, not on the basis of dictatorial power, but on the basis of spiritual authority as demonstrated in his faithfulness to Christ. And notice what I put on your outline. A healthy Christian marriage is a powerful illustration of the gospel. And I realize that in the culture and the day that we're living, there is many, as percentage-wise, there are as many Christians getting divorced as there are non-Christians. And I'm ashamed to say that. Children are not to be seen as an imposition on the marriage, but as a blessing that promises a heritage from the Lord. Proverbs 17:6 says, "The crown is the celebrated symbol of status. The celebrated reward is the pride their children and grandchildren take in them." Because Proverbs 17:6 says, "Grandchildren are the crown of an old man, and the glory of sons is their father." And what does he really mean by that? Well, it simply means that in marriage and as parents, children are truly a heritage, a gift from God. And many of you in here are grandparents. And I know you're like me, you dote on your grandchildren. Whether you hold them in their arms or whether they hold you in their arms. I mean, you know what I'm talking about, whether they're in their 20s, 30s, or 40s. Grandchildren are special. Great-grandchildren are special. They are the crown of us older people. And we take pride. I don't know how many times many of us here have bragged on our children or our grandchildren, and we should, because they are our crown. They're our heritage. But we need to be reminded that parents are to raise their children in the training and instruction of the Lord. Ephesians 6:4 says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." Well, you know, most of us, we've had our chance at that. Our children are grown. They're married. They're having children. But we can still speak into our grandchildren's lives and our great-grandchildren's lives and still try to be an example to our sons and daughters who are married and have children. But we still, even if our children are grown, we never cease to be parents. And sometimes in different ways we need to discipline them and instruct them. And fathers are to take the lead. And discipline is not to be arbitrary or driven by anger. So the primary responsibilities of nurturing the family and raising the children are assigned to the husband and wife. Children are also assigned responsibility to honor and obey their parents, for this is pleasing to God and is a testimony to God's loving purpose for the family. Again, in our culture, we live in a time when the definition of family is a matter of social and political controversy, and when the culture is confused about the definition of marriage. But here's the challenge for you and I in today's world. Because we bear the unique responsibility to tell the truth, to live the truth, and to bear witness to God's loving intention in establishing marriage and the family for our good. In our culture today, that's not easy. For people who have gone the other way, who are following a secular view of marriage and childbearing and family, don't care what we think. Don't care that we believe in God. Don't care that we are trying to follow the Bible. But does that excuse us from not doing, sharing with people? No, it doesn't. If they say, "I don't want to hear it," you tried. If they get angry at you for doing it, you tried. But remember, if you get into that situation, do it lovingly but firmly. Try as best as you can to help them to see the truth and continue to live out that truth in your life. My wife shared with me a little humorous story. It doesn't relate to the family, to marriage, but it does relate to us living out our faith. And that's so important in the culture that we're living today. Several years ago, a preacher from out of state accepted a call to a church in Houston, Texas. Some weeks after he arrived, he had an occasion to ride the bus from his home to the downtown area. When he sat down, he discovered that the driver had accidentally given him a quarter too much change. And as he considered what to do, he thought to himself, "You better give the quarter back. It would be wrong to keep it." But then he thought, "Oh, forget it. It's only a quarter. Who would worry about this little amount? Anyway, the bus company gets too much fare. They will never miss it. Accept it as a gift from God and keep quiet." When his stop came, he paused momentarily at the door, and then he handed the quarter to the driver and said, "Here, you gave me too much change." And the driver, with a smile, replied, "Aren't you the new preacher in town?" "Yes," he replied. "Well, I've been thinking a lot lately about going somewhere to worship. And I just wanted to see what you would do if I gave you too much change. And then he said, I'll see you at church on Sunday. And when the preacher stepped off the bus, he literally grabbed the nearest light pole, held on, and said, Oh God, I almost sold your son for a quarter. Now, how does that relate to all I've said today? Well, I've done a lot of marriage counseling for people who wanted to get married over the years. I require that. And because, you know, especially these young couples, they come in and they say, well, we're in love. We don't need all of this counseling. I said, yes, you do. Because I found out one thing consistently. As I began to counsel them over a period of weeks, and I asked them questions, and you'd be surprised how many different answers you get, and how many things they've never talked about. But the man and the woman, each bring baggage into that relationship. And a lot of that baggage is what they saw in the home from their parents. And so they often discipline their children that they have like their parents did, which isn't always right. Or they argue like their parents did, which isn't always right when it turns to shouting and all that other stuff that goes along with that. And so, even though most of us are at the age that we're at, hopefully, we have lived out a Christ-like life as a parent, a grandparent, or a great-grandparent. Because often, those grandchildren and great-grandchildren will do as we do. And one of the things that I'm looking forward to in retirement is speaking into the life of my great-grandchildren. We've had our opportunity with the grandkids. So I share that story simply to say we need to be careful how we react in front of even today, our grown children, how we react to our grandchildren or great-grandchildren. Because they probably know we're Christians, if they're old enough to understand what that is. They know they go to church because they come and sit with us at church. And so we need to act like that the personal relationship we say we have with Jesus Christ. I am so grateful that my father was a born-again believer, loved the Lord, loved his wife, my mother, and me. And he lived out his life. My only regret is that he only lived till I was 13. And how many times I have missed him over the years. And some of you have been through the same thing. So fathers, you are important. You know that. And part of the crumbling society that we live in today, it's crumbling because there are not fathers in the home. And a lot of the violence, a lot of the crime, a lot of the hatred is occurring because there wasn't a father to role model and mentor the children in the home. You know that. I know that. So let's do our best, church, in our roles as parents and grandparents and great-grandparents to do all that we can to show those in our family how to approach in a Christ-like way the culture that we're living in today. Let's pray.